702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, we'll unpack the judgments of the Electoral Court. The DA has won its case for more overseas voting stations, and Zuma can run for Parliament. A new poll by the SRF shows the MK party is growing. Six suspects arrested for the murder of Kaiser Chiefs Luc Fleurs. The minister and mayor conduct oversight visits of water treatment plants in Tswane, and Gauteng e-tolls expire tomorrow. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. As you heard in the news bulletin, e-tolls expiring tomorrow at 11:59:59. So the gantries aren't coming down. The gantries will stay up, but your tags will no longer be connected. And this has taken such a long time to get to this point, but it really does speak volumes for the power of civic action and the work done by civil society organizations, particularly OUTA. Let me know your thoughts about that. Joburg, Tswane, Gauteng residents, send me a WhatsApp voice note, 0727021702, 0725671567. Finally, we'll see the end of e-tolls tomorrow night. Let's start with a couple of decisions made by the Electoral Court yesterday that really have people talking today. The first one is the IEC being dealt another blow because the Electoral Court ruling in favour of the DA with regard to overseas voters. So if you remember, the DA took the IEC and the Department of International Relations and Cooperation to the Electoral Court to try and get more voting stations at high commissions and embassies. And the court reviewed and set aside the IEC's decision not to allow the casting of special votes at consulates. So that's the one ruling. The other one is one that really has taken a lot of people by surprise around whether or not Jacob Zuma can run for Parliament. So the Electoral Court handing down a judgment, but not the reasons for the judgment yesterday, after the IEC endorsed objections to Zuma's candidacy, citing his criminal record from that 15-month jail term that was given to him by the Constitutional Court. So as things stand at the moment, we don't have the reasons there, but that decision means that Jacob Zuma is eligible to run for Parliament. Let's first get reaction to that first decision and have a listen to the DA's Helen Ziller reacting to that.
The DA is delighted that the court has ruled that all consulates and embassies and high commissions, whether they are staffed by transferred people from South Africa or honorary consuls in their countries, can be used as voting stations in the election. That is consistent with the Electoral Act, and it enables far more South Africans living abroad to vote in this crucial election. The DA has followed up with the IEC to make sure that they are making proper arrangements with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation to ensure that every single consulate across the world will be able to act as a voting station for South Africans living in those countries.
That's the DA's Helen Ziller. Let's unpack this with Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter. Khumotso, good afternoon to you. Let's start with this DA, the voting station ruling. Is the IEC able to comply with this decision? Is international relations able to comply with this decision? Because it's now a lot more work.
Yeah. So I remember sitting in the Electoral Court, Mandy, and Jeff Butlander SC was arguing how this is going to be near impossible. I mean, it's over 130 honorary consulates around the world. And it's important to say that this ruling is specifically on honorary consulates. Those, by nature, are, you know, they are privately run. The buildings there, our government has no power over. And so the argument that was being made by the IEC is how how are we going to ensure that security, you know, maintain the integrity of these votes in those places? The IEC is saying we would actually have to, number one, make sure that these places can actually host or house an election. And then we have to make sure that there is the sufficient staff. I mean, it was, you know, conversation about people moving from one part of the country hours away. This is IEC staff that was said to be stationed in places or at the consulate or at the High Commission, having to be moved now to these honorary consulates to make this happen. And so in their arguments alone, the IEC was basically saying, we're not going to be able to do this.
That's going to be incredibly challenging over the short period of time as well. Yeah. Lots of reaction also to the Electoral Court decision regarding former President Jacob Zuma and the fact that he can now run for Parliament. To be clear, we haven't got the reasons from the court, right? So how are people making sense of this?
Yeah, so I mean, the Electoral Court has been very busy, and I believe they had a deadline, if I'm not mistaken, to get through certain issues pertaining to this particular election. And that's why they've been handing out these orders without the full judgments in order to make it, right? But, you know, in terms of this ruling, I mean, of course, most people wanting to know what the reasons are. And all that I've been hearing quite a bit of, it's just trying to make sense of what could possibly have swayed the Electoral Court in the way that it went, particularly because this case, Mandy, was particularly on Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution. And that piece of legislation is very clear about who is eligible to be a Member of Parliament and who isn't. And so inadvertently, it seems that the Electoral Court deems that Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution does not apply to former President Jacob Zuma. Of course, the reasons behind that and whether that is the case will only be known once they release the full judgment.
Khumotso, thank you very much for that. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter. So now, what does all of this mean in terms of the elections? Michael Atkins is an elections analyst and joins us now. Michael, good afternoon to you. Let's start with the DA judgment and the fact that people overseas, expats, will now be able to vote much, much easier. That obviously will count in favour of the Democratic Alliance and opposition parties, I imagine.
Look, on past election outcomes, that is the case. I look at this not so much from the politics of it, but broadening access to voting for South African voters. And in that sense, I welcome the ruling, because anything which gives more of us the right to vote and the ability to vote is a positive step, aside from the politics. I mean, the DA may well have made a calculation that they win support from people and they maybe garner a few extra votes. But aside from that, it is broadening the democratic access.
Which, of course, is the argument made by the DA, and it is a crucial one just in terms of the more people that can vote, the better. In terms of the other ruling, the Electoral Court, on whether or not Jacob Zuma is eligible to run for Parliament, if you look at that in parallel with a new poll that's out from the Social Research Foundation today, which shows that the MK party is growing, all of this will really be giving the MK party momentum, won't it?
Yes. But I actually take the view that it didn't matter what the outcome of yesterday's ruling was going to be. Whatever the court was saying, the publicity generated from the case would have been to the advantage of MK. The old saying that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
That's very much the case. And if you look at the media coverage largely over the past few weeks, there's been a ton of media coverage for Zuma and the MK party. So what is your sense as an elections analyst perspective of how this party could do come May 29th?
Look, crystal balls are always dangerous. But we do know from known patterns within the ANC, if you look at ANC elective conferences, for example, KZN, the support for Mr. Zuma or his camp, if you want to put it that way, and for the other part of the ANC, in KZN has been largely split down the middle. So if we were to project that onto the electorate, we could be looking at obviously a very interesting situation in KwaZulu-Natal. It would be surprising if MK did not substantially dent or even remove the majority that the ANC has in KwaZulu-Natal.
Michael, thank you very much for that. Michael Atkins, elections analyst, speaking to us there. Speaking of the MK party, its Youth League leader has now been removed. So there's some ructions happening there at the moment. I also mentioned that Social Research Foundation poll, which came out today, which has had quite a significant impact on the rand. And what it's effectively telling us is that the MK party is growing and is eating into the ANC. That poll suggests that the ANC could even come down to as low as 39%. So let's get some more analysis on this now with Asanda Ngoasheng, political analyst. Asanda, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What kind of momentum do you think the MK party will get from yesterday's electoral court ruling?
Good afternoon and thank you for having me. I think that, you know, the MK is using the court cases and of course its relationship with Jacob Zuma to ensure that it's essentially hogging the headlines. And I think that, you know, this is important for them because they have zero votes at this point in time. And so they're trying to get as much media publicity and attention as possible. And I think that, you know, they are likely to definitely get some seats in parliament. I just don't know how many seats they will get. But also even before that, they still have many hurdles to go through. So one of them, I would say, is the fact that the IEC has said that, you know, the IEC court said there can be an appeal within the next 3 days, which might happen. There's also the fact that at some point or at some level, this case will have to go all the way to the Constitutional Court because it has implications for the political rights of people who have a criminal record and their ability to stand or not stand. And I think there also could potentially even be more court cases coming around how the terms of a president is calculated, seeing that Jacob Zuma has already had two terms and he's already started talking about challenging that. And so we might find that, you know, we're spending, you know, the next kind of almost 2 months in and out of court before we actually get to May 29. And I think it could go either way at this point. And I don't see, again, I don't see the MK, you know, getting the majority vote and toppling the ANC. But I think they are potentially destabilizing force at a time when the ANC is fighting for its life in terms of trying to retain the majority. So they do have the potential to break the ANC's back in terms of those percentages and potentially either become a kingmaker for the ANC or against the ANC should the ANC not get enough of a majority.
I imagine the notion of Jacob Zuma being an MP, a member of parliament, is frightening a lot of people because you would think that considering what happened during his term, he shouldn't be eligible just in terms of the mismanagement. So if you look at Busisiwe Mkhwebane as an MP, the idea of an impeached judge like John Khlope potentially becoming an MP. Doesn't that tell us that perhaps the authors of our constitution 30 years ago were naive and that system is in a way broken?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say naive. I think, you know, it is a good thing when people have kind of good wishes, particularly if you consider the context that we were coming out of. We never thought that we could get to the stage for various reasons. And I think that informed, you know, the ways in which the constitution was written. But I think, you know, Jacob Zuma, as you say, one of his contributions, as far as I'm concerned, is that he made us really think about the constitution and the things that we assumed of people who are in leadership and the things that we assumed of people's ability to be ethical and be able to kind of walk the line between what is legal and what is ethical and moral, which it seems like a lot of our politicians are unable to do. And I think, again, as I said, this court case is probably going to have to go to the Constitutional Court because it's not just about Jacob Zuma. Because I think for me, that's the worrisome thing that people don't necessarily understand, that what just happened in the IC court is not just about Jacob Zuma. It's about South Africa and South Africa's ability to deal with politicians who are seen to be corrupt, who are alleged to be corrupt, and who have a very big stake in how this country is governed. You don't want to be a country that has people able to go and have allegations of corruption and everything that Jacob Zuma has gone through all the way down to the Zondo Commission and be able to come back and kind of potentially do the same thing again. You want there to be consequences for negative actions by those who are given a lot of power. And I think for me, one of the biggest questions that is now sitting with us is the role of the judiciary. Because remember, there are three arms of government. It is the judiciary, it is the legislature, and it is the executive. And I think that this is a moment where the judiciary is going to have to play a critical role in deciding the next steps, because it does have a role to play. Sometimes people think when the judiciary makes, you know, some of these actions, they see it like as interfering in the state, etc. And they forget that the very reason of existence of the judiciary is to be able to hold those who are in power accountable. And I think a former president is very much somebody that needs to constantly be held to account and needs to ensure that, you know, there are checks and balances around how they exercise the power that they continue to have and will have in perpetuity, basically because of the fact that they used to be president. Because being president means you have access to all kinds of things that the ordinary South African doesn't have access to. And the idea and why we want credible, not corrupt leadership is because you want people to not then take that knowledge and use it against the state. And I believe that this is part of what we are seeing now, that we have a former president who has literally turned enemy of the state and really is thinking about himself and his own selfish political desires rather than thinking about, is this a good thing? Yep. Is me as Jacob Zuma trying to go back to parliament a good thing for South Africa? Will this benefit South Africa and South Africans? And does this add credibility to South Africa's democracy? And so I think sometimes we get lost in thinking that, oh no, this has nothing to do with us. It's just an internal war between the MK and the ANC. But unfortunately, it has a lot to do with us. And although, you know, on the one part, if it didn't affect us, I'd be saying the chickens are coming to home to roost for the ANC. Yeah, the and ANC they deserve everything this, that's coming yeah, for
the,
them.
The ANC created this monster.
You know, they created this monster. Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They created this monster from supporting him through rape allegations to supporting him through Nkandla allegations, through supporting him all the way through the Zondo Commission and all the many revelations and allegations of bankrupting the state. They should have known that they've created a person who can never be held accountable easily because they made him believe he's unaccountable. And all we're seeing now are actually the results of their own actions. And if all it affected was the ANC, I'd be like, yeah, sure. But unfortunately, it affects us as South African. It raises questions about the credibility of our democracy. It raises questions about our ability to rein in and deal with corruption, which is critical for anybody who wants South Africa as a country to be able to continue and people to invest in us, not only financially, but also to invest in us as a country and believe that we have what it takes and what is needed to be a good country with good governance.
Asanda Ngosheng, excellent analysis there. Thank you so much, political analyst, having a look at that situation with Jacob Zuma. Of course, the ANC, as she says, created this monster, but they're also failing to act against him. He still remains a member of the ANC. That's absolutely ludicrous at this point. So lots of reaction to that. And then just a last take on the elections. Of course, every week we have Politicking with Tidi Madia. And this week, Tidi speaks to the Good Party founder and leader, Patricia de Lille, who's been speaking about John Steenhuisen's very controversial remarks from the weekend about campaigning in the Western Cape. There's been plenty of reaction to that as well. I have noticed that both Musi Maimane and Sonkezo Zibi have been campaigning in the Western Cape over the last couple of days, making their point. But let's have a listen to what Patricia de Lille had to say to Tidi Madia.
This week on Polytricking with Sidi Madia.
The comments that came from John Steen is the leader of the DA, labeling parties such as good as mercenaries, asking what you want in the Western Cape, speaking about how all of these parties were going to be in a grand coalition and the likes are just seeking to loot in the Western Cape.
You know, I never listened to that fool. The way I've responded to what he has said, I said he sounded like a second-hand car salesman or a dog shampoo salesman, because that's what he used to be. He doesn't understand how democracy works because he never fought for this democracy.
Patricia Tindall, the first woman to start a political party in this democratic dispensation.
Listen to the full episode on TimeMediaPlus.com. Polytricking with Sidi Madia on EWN. In touch, in tune, and independent.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Good day, Mandy. It's Norman in Pretoria. I think that the Gauteng government and the National Department of Transport, for them to have come to the realization that these countries are just put there to tax the taxpayer and to cancel it finally. I think it's a gimmick, in a sense that the ANC, they know in Gauteng they're in trouble and they're trying to come up with ideas to really impress the voters, but they're not going to succeed. MK is on the rise, as the states are saying.
Hello, Mendy. Rafana here, Alliance Binoni. And so, Mendy, I stand to be corrected, but I thought that the government gave Sandral the guarantee when they did these developments and installed the gantries. In other words, whether we pay or we don't pay, the government still has to find money somewhere to have Sandral paid. But I'm glad in that case that all the South Africans are going to be carrying the burden of these gantries or e-tolls. In that case, it's fine then.
Lots of response there to that announcement from the Transport Minister that e-tolls will be gone by 11:59 tomorrow night. The gantries won't be coming down. I think the big question for a lot of people is around refunds. What happens to those refunds? King Spoo, I hear the Minister talking about the end of the beeping of e-tolls. Almost as an admission of guilt, yet motorists are still having to pay outstanding debt. Did Lesufi not promise motorists would get refunds, yet more empty promises from politicians? We are so gullible. We'll chat to our reporter on that a bit later on.
Hi, Mandy. With regards to the e-tolls, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. When they constructed these e-tolls, they never consulted us. So what they did was very good. They've scrapped them because they knew what was the purpose. And secondly, the one of former President Jacob Zuma, I really don't understand. Because if tomorrow it can be said that Zuma must go to court, Mzwanele will come here and tell us that Mr. Zuma is frail, he's 8 years old. So I don't know whether now he's 40 now and he's young and energetic. Thank you, Zuma.
Yeah, thanks, Zama. An excellent point there that if there was a medical issue, is there still a medical issue? Is he? Can he go? The road has been cleared for him to now go to Parliament, but will he actually? So he will be a candidate, but will he actually want to be an MP? On WhatsApp, Khlengani says, "Hi, Mandy, your previous analyst shares her own opinion about Jay-Z. Unfortunately, it's not an opinion shared by South Africans. Jay-Z will change South African politics. The opposition parties failed to bring the ANC under 50%. Now, here's the opportunity. Jay-Z will bring the ANC under 50%. Watch this space." Look, I take your point, but I think it's important to note that it's not just the MK party that is going to bring the ANC below 50%. The MK party is also eating into the EFF votes, according to various polling that is out. That Social Research Foundation poll putting the ANC as low as 39%. Other polls are suggesting that the ANC won't come quite so low, that it would be mid-40s. Various polls, Ipsos, they've got it at a different number. But of course, it does across the board show us that the MK party is growing.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday.
12 to 1 p.m.
We have been looking throughout the week at the interviews for the vacancy on the Constitutional Court, which we now know that there weren't sufficient candidates approved, so that vacancy continues. But today, the first of two candidates for that Electoral Court are being interviewed, and we've been speaking about the Electoral Court and how it's constituted and those decisions. The first candidate is a Joburg judge who's being interviewed, who was an attorney, was appointed as a judge as well. Let's find out about that with Mbekizeli Benjamin, Research and Advocacy Officer at Judges Matter. Mbekizeli, good afternoon to you. Our focus on the Electoral Court today. Tell us about these interviews.
Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to the listeners. Yes, this morning the JSC was interviewing two candidates for the Electoral Court. Both candidates are members of the Johannesburg High Court, so they will serve at the High Court, at the Electoral Court, as and when a case comes up. Both of them, in fact, have been involved in some way in the Zuma and MK cases. The first candidate, Judge Lester Adams, he was an attorney before becoming a judge in 2017, sorry. And he was involved in the MK case from last week. You'll remember that case about the registration of the MK party. So he was involved there as an acting judge. And then the other candidate was Justice Sienna Yakub. And she was involved in the Zuma candidacy case that was run on Monday, and the order was handed down just yesterday. So they've been really busy at the Electoral Court already as acting justices. Both of them wanted to be permanent. However, the JSC has decided to not appoint either or one of them. They faced quite a tough interview when they were grilled on their understanding of electoral laws, and particularly on how they would adjudicate disputes regarding this new legislation, including for the independent candidates and the Political Funding Act.
Mbekizeli, thank you very much. Mbekizeli Benjamin, Research and Advocacy Officer at Judges Matter, speaking to us about those interviews for the vacancy on the Electoral Court.
702. 702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Another breaking news story this morning. Police telling us that they have arrested six suspects in connection with the murder of Kaizer Chiefs soccer player Luke Fleurs, saying that this is to do with a hijacking syndicate. I know there have been some reports to the contrary, but police are saying that it was in fact a hijacking. Have a listen to the police spokesperson, Mavela Masondo.
This is the voice note from Lieutenant Colonel Mavela Masondo of the police in Gauteng. Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2024. Police arrest six suspects for the alleged hijacking and murder of a Kaizer Chiefs soccer player. The team that was appointed by the Gauteng Provincial Commissioner, Lieutenant General Tomim Tombin, to trace and arrest the suspects who allegedly hijacked and killed the Kaizer Chiefs soccer player has made a breakthrough by arresting six suspects and recovering the victim's car. The six suspects were traced and arrested in Slovoville in Soweto in the early hours of Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2024, while the vehicle that was already stripped was recovered on Monday, the 8th of April, 2024. Police believe that the suspects are part of a syndicate that is responsible for car hijacking in Gauteng, and the search for more suspects is continuing. The suspects are expected to appear before Roodepoort Magistrates Court on Friday, the 12th of April, 2024.
Lieutenant Colonel Mavela Masondo, the police spokesperson there, about the arrests for the murder of Kaizer Chiefs soccer player Luke Fleurs, and a memorial taking place tomorrow at FNB Stadium at midday for that Kaizer Chiefs soccer player Luke Fleurs.
WhatsApp Mandy
on 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon, Mandy and your team. Kingsley from Germiston. I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiments shared by your political analyst. And I've had the same feeling for quite some time now, that the ANC has created this situation. And they've allowed the former president to behave with impunity. And now that it's a threat to them, all of a sudden they're running around like headless chickens. And quite frankly, they never learned from their mistake, because even with the current president and the whole Pala Pala saga, they did the same thing and they started closing ranks when they knew that they should have done the right thing from the word go, but they failed to do so. And here we sit.
Mandy, I will tell you one thing. If the reason behind the electoral court's decision has got to do with the fact that there was a remission of sentence, it would be completely wrong. I hope it's a question of jurisdiction, ultra vires, or whatever they're talking about. But the bottom line is, the law says if you've got a conviction of more than 12 months or more without an option of a fine, you're not eligible. You're not eligible. It's as simple as that. The fact that Cyril decided to later cut the sentence, it doesn't matter. You are not eligible. I don't understand this.
I think you are echoing the sentiments of many, many legal analysts and political analysts out there, and reporters, and myself, for just being incredibly confused by this decision by the Electoral Court, because the Constitution is very clear. And I think we need to understand this, the idea of remission and what it actually means when it comes to whether or not somebody is eligible, because the Constitution is very clear. We do not have the reasons from the Electoral Court. I have to point that out. So we are waiting for the reasons. We have a judgment. We do not have the reasons. And I think once those come out, there'll be a lot more clarity around why the Electoral Court took this decision.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
We have been speaking about the Transport Minister's update today on the scrapping of e-tolls in Gauteng. She's been telling us that at 11:59 tomorrow that the e-tolls will be switched off. Oren Singh, EWN reporter, has been at that briefing for us. Oren, good afternoon to you. Take us through what the Transport Minister had to say.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, I think it's been, more than a decade since South Africans, specifically those living in Gauteng, have been pushing back against the e-toll scheme, the system that was implemented soon after the 2010 World Cup. As of today, we have official announcement. We knew that the Transport Minister had put out a government gazette earlier this year. But as of today, we know for sure that as of midnight tomorrow, going into Friday morning, e-tolls will be switched off. The e-tags, when you drive through a gantry, will not beep, as we all know and have come to know that that beep. Those will be switched off. However, they do say the gantries will remain on, and this plays into the bigger picture for the Gauteng provincial government in CCTV and monitoring for crime fighting and safety reasons. Also, to help assist in clamping down on speeding motorists and so forth. I think the biggest thing that's coming out of the briefing today, Mandy, is that SANRAL, as the implementing agent, will now be responsible of maintaining the national roads, whereas the funds that were being collected from e-tolls previously were being pushed into road infrastructure and ensuring that our roads remain taken care of. SANRAL have now been made the implementing agent to actually continue to maintain those roads. They've had an approval from Treasury to basically expand their borrowing rates from Treasury. I think they have an expansion of 16.5 billion rand, which they are now allowed to borrow. But this will also allow SANRAL to go out into the private sector and enable them to try and get funds from the private sector in assisting with some of their projects, that being the maintenance of critical roads in and around Gauteng.
Oren, one of the big questions we're getting on the WhatsApp line here is around refunds and what happens with those. Did the minister say anything about that?
Well, it was very vague in terms of refunds. We do know that those with outstanding debts will still have to be paying those debts. There wasn't very much clarification on what's going to happen when it comes to refunds. We do know that the e-tolling system online will still be online. People are more than welcome to still go on, settle debts and make applications for refunds. Just because the system itself, in terms of the gantries, are being switched off, It doesn't mean that the entire back-end system of e-tolling will be switched off. So members of the public, motorists, are still going to be allowed to go onto the e-tolling website to submit applications for refunds. And also, if they're wanting to, in terms of what the transport minister says, they have an obligation to settle those debts, but they haven't made a ruling on how they're going to enforce that,
okay,
where the people don't settle those debts or not.
Oren, thank you very much. Oren Singh, EWN reporter. Well, let's have a listen to the transport minister at that briefing earlier today.
We must now move forward as a nation and contribute to build on the significant progress that we have made as a country in our first 30 years of democracy. I want to heartily thank the Department of Transport, led in particular by the DG and of course the DDG for roads, the National Treasury, the Gauteng Province, led by the Premier and the MEC, but also to thank the Minister of Finance, Mr. Kotongwane, the people of South Africa for understanding. More so, I also want to thank the President of the Republic of South Africa, His Excellency, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, for providing the much needed leadership in a manner that was never easy, a matter that was never easy, and a matter that was very complex. I thank you very much.
Thank you to the people of South Africa for your patience on this exercise that's lasted 10 years that we clearly got very, very wrong.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Happening at the moment, the Minister of Water and Sanitation, Senzo Mchunu, together with the City of Tshwane Mayor, Silas Brink, are busy conducting an oversight project inspection in Tshwane at the Rooiwal Wastewater Treatment Works in the Klipdrift Package Plant in Hammanskraal, north of Pretoria. Let's speak to the Deputy DG for Water Services, Resimati Matie. Deputy DG, thank you very much for your time. Tell us about the importance of this Rooiwal Wastewater Treatment Work specifically. It really has been the focus of much attention when it comes to the water supply in Tshwane.
Yes, Mandy, thank you for having us. You will be well aware that a year ago, both the minister and the executive mayor of Tshwane actually made a public announcement, part of which was the partnership between the department and the city of Tshwane to do, among others, of critical importance was the refurbishment of the Rooiwal Wastewater Treatment Works. As you know, the information around Rooiwal is up in the SIU space, where there was a work that was not necessarily completed by the then service providers. So the partnership was to ensure that at least there has to be funding allocated, proper project monitoring, and ensure that that work gets completed so that the effluent that gets discharged from the Rooiwal Wastewater Treatment Plant complies with standards. So today, the minister, together with the executive mayor, they've actually been on site to check progress since the appointment of the contractor for general buildings. And of course, there's also going to be another contractor for mechanical and electronics that will be looking into the whole project. So both the mayor and the minister went for an oversight. The second phase of the oversight, which they've done, Mandy, is actually an oversight visit at the Clip Drift, where there's going to be a construction of a package plant. There they were doing a sort of turning. As you may know, portions of Hammanskraal have actually been dealt so hard with the issue of cholera. Of course, they can't use the water that comes from the Themba water treatment plant. So the commitment by the minister was that Mahalis Water, which is the entity of the department, will be the implementing agent to construct this 50 megaliter package plant. Now, today, a sort of training was being done by both the mayor and the minister to ensure that since the contractor has been appointed to start with the works, we can basically measure the progress thereof. So the two events were based on that, yes.
Deputy DG, on the work being done at Rooiwal, are you satisfied with the progress being made there, and what is the status of that?
The work, man, is still at a preliminary stage. The measurement for now was about 5 to 10%, because they've done some dislodging of some of the oxidation ponds. in the treatment plant. There's still quite a lot of work that needs to be done, but at least we are sure that there is progress. The contractor is on site. They did confirm today that the second contractor for the electrical and mechanical, which will be dealing with pumps and the other electrical work, has also been appointed. So in the next few weeks, they will also be starting. So these contractors are going to run in parallel to ensure that the plant actually functions at full capacity.
Deputy DG, thank you very much for making time to speak to us. Resimati Mate, the DDG for Water Services, explaining the minister and the mayor out in Tshwane today, checking the progress there.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 7:02.
Let's walk the talk.
12:54 on the Midday Report. Let's take a look now at something a bit different to the politics that we've been looking at. We know that there's a global urgency to combat climate change. So South Africa looking at sustainable solutions that, of course, balance with economic development, with environmental stewardship as well. The Council for Geoscience is spearheading efforts to take a look at technology called carbon capture utilization and storage technology. So that's CCUS technology. And the idea here is to mitigate CO2 emissions from coal-fired power plants. Let's understand what this is about with the Council for Geosciences CCU project manager, Qondi Ngokwana. Qondi, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time today. Firstly, can you explain the CCUS technology to us in layman's terms?
Good afternoon, Mandy, and the listeners. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. The CCUS technology, as you have already introduced, is part of the government's interventions in terms of reducing the CO2 emissions into the atmosphere and the undesirable effect of that into the climate change. So the CCUS technology involves capturing that CO2 from the point source emitters, such as the coal-fired power stations, separate it from those point source emitters, compress it in a manner that can be transported and transported to the geological formations that would have been carefully chosen, and making sure that those storage sites are well suitable for storing the CO2 in a sustainable manner.
So what are the benefits then of using this technology compared to just simply shutting down our coal plants?
As you understand, Mandy, we are heavily dependent on coal for our energy production, and also coal mining industry in its own shoulders a lot of jobs, particularly in the provinces like the Mpumalanga that are at the epicenter of coal production in the country. Now, this technology allows us to be able to transition into a low carbon economy in a sustainable manner, in a manner that will allow us time to be able to transition without a major impact and disruption into our energy supply as well as our socioeconomy.
Qondi, tell me about the Leandra site. What's happening there? You've chosen that as the location for the pilot site for this technology project. Tell us about that and why there.
Yes, thank you, Manny. The Leandra site has been chosen, one for the suitable geology that allows us to pilot this technology into geological sequence that is, has got capacity to inject CO2 in it. The other important thing with the Leandra site is right at the epicenter of coal production in the Mpumalanga province. The big thing there is to allow the storage site to be closer to these sources of CO2 to be able to have the economics that make sense in terms of transporting this CO2 to this particular injection site. And the site has been chosen in Leandra in the Mpumalanga province.
Of course, one of the big concerns around the shift from coal-fired power stations to renewable energy has often been the impact on coal mining jobs and communities that are reliant on the coal industry. So how will this project then impact on those jobs in those communities?
Yes, but you are quite correct. We're heavily reliant on coal as a country, and also a lot of these communities, particularly in the province of Mpumalanga, are heavily dependent on coal for jobs in that particular area. The CCUS technology allows us to be able to continuously use the coal in terms of ensuring our energy security and be able to allow the economics of those particular areas to continue to thrive while also balancing with the environmental requirements.
And lastly, what are the potential timelines for this to become a commercially viable solution in South Africa?
Yeah, we've made quite some headway in terms of the research that underpins this technology. We're looking at now getting into the pilot injection in the next year, 2 years or so, and looking at going fully commercial in about 5 years' time.
Kondi, thank you so much for explaining all of that to us. Kondi Tokwana is the CCU project manager at the Council for Geoscience, explaining carbon capture, utilization and storage technology.
Mandy is on Twitter.
At Mandy Wiener.
Hi, Manny. This just proves that our country is now a circus. Our country is a total circus now with all this happening. Bringing back the former president with so much involved in corruption and things like that. And I don't understand this.
Good afternoon, Cape Town, Mr. Malim Wembeck. Let's talk about Zuma. Whether we like it or not, Zuma, he's gonna come back parliament, really. I mean, Zuma is got a favorite, really. Mandela, Mbeki, and Zuma, and all that, and Ramaphosa. I mean, he's got support, really, whether we like it or not, really. I'm one of the ANC support Western Cape, but Zuma, he will come back. And he will break, he will get his slice in the parliament, and it's going to be a fight and the hoo-ha and all that. Let's hope whoever wins, I mean, he's going to look after the country. That's the main things.
6 weeks to the elections. Buckle up. It's going to get interesting.